This is Brian Keller. You're listening to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News.
Thank you, BK. We are back with a fresh episode just for you, fellow Hanshin Tigers fan. Welcome to this episode 179 on Tuesday, July the 18th here in Japan. It is hot and muggy out there. My goodness. Well, anyhow, I'm the founder of H10 T-Ray, and with me out in Hawaii is Sanjay. Aloha, brother.
Aloha, brother T-Ray. How's it? I hope you had a good Umi no Hi, Ocean Day, holiday, three-day weekend.
I had to work, but yeah, thanks.
Oh, you had to work. I'm sorry to hear that.
We in the university circuit tend to not take national holidays off, so it's all good. I mean, it means that I get a longer, you know, summer break or whatever, so I'll take it. Anyhow, on this day's show, we are at the midpoint of the season. In some respects, it is the All-Star break. And so we are actually going to look at our manager, Akinobu Okada, and see how he's doing so far. Sanjay, are you ready for your HT dopamine and giving the dopamine to your friends out there?
You better believe it. Bring it on, brother T-Ray.
All right, let's go. It's time for some rumors and news.
Rumors and news. News.
So we start things off with, because this is the All-Star break, we do have to talk about the All-Star game and or games coming up on Wednesday and Thursday. As you might be aware, I'm sure you are, Sanjay, but of the 11 possible positions that fans could vote players in for, the Tigers got 10. So all but Shogo Akiyama, it's an all-Tiger situation. That said, Chikamoto and Yuasa withdrew because of injury or rehab, so they are not playing the game. But we voted in 10, and we also got one more manager selection. That was Kotaro Otake, our left-handed pitching stud. And so I guess officially 11 guys made the team, 2 withdrew, so we got 9. That's still a pretty good representation.
Actually, we had 9 selected in, what was it, 2003?
I believe so.
Yeah. Not all of them played, but yeah. So this is not a unique thing with Tigers fans, and there are a lot of people who complain about it, but hey, you know, when you're a popular team and the fans are supporting you, then that's what All-Star is all about, right?
I mean, it's just like any election out there. If you're not voting, what right do you have to complain? Right?
Exactly.
I mean, Tigers fans put, you know, they put this into action. They go out to the voting booths, or when they go to the stadium, and, you know, our stadium holds more fans than any other and sells out more than any other. So we're getting more ballots to the fans, but also it's available online. And I think, you know, the Tigers Nation just let their voices be heard. So, hey, let's roll with it. Let's have fun this Wednesday, Thursday.
Looking forward to it, man.
So let's talk a little bit about the injuries. And of course, we got to start with Chikamoto. Last show, we had to kind of thread in the update, because as we were talking, or before we after we finished recording, I think 20 minutes after
we finished, yeah.
Yeah, the report came out that Chikamoto was being deactivated. Cracked ribs was the call. But the good news is he took live batting practice on July the 15th. And the pitcher that he faced in that live batting practice was none other than Yuasa. So that's also good news. But it has been said that Chikamoto might be joining the top squad for workouts starting on Wednesday. And he may be ready on time for Saturday when we resume gameplay against the Swallows.
So in a weird way, this came at a good time during the All-Star break.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we're minimizing the number of days that or games that he misses. You know, he'll get, well, he got drilled in the ribs on the 2nd. So it's 20 days from the time that he got drilled to the time he plays again, if he gets in on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. But it's not that many games. So I think it's 11 games.
So, wishing him the best, speediest, fullest recovery.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ganbare Chika-chan. Okay, so that is basically the injury report. I mean, there are other guys, but there's just no news on them. So let's talk real quick about the call-ups and send-downs. Sato got called up as did Onodera, Hamachi, and Oyokawa on July the 5th. Aoyagi will get to him soon, but he got called up for a start on the 11th, and Saiki got called up for a start on the 15th. And so getting the send downs were, of course, Chikamoto, and then Kajiya and Yuki Nishi on July the 5th, Okadome on July the 8th. So I think he only got one mound in there. Aoyagi got refarmed, but that was just because of the All-Star break. And then Otake also got a breather on the 13th.
Yep. I think the comment was that Otake hasn't really pitched that much, so he really could use a break right about now. Hadn't pitched that much in previous seasons.
Career-wise, yeah, that's right. That's right. So he definitely needed it. By the way, he is tops in the Central League right now in ERA. So he qualifies, and he is sitting at the top of that ranking. So good on him. And it'll be fun to see him in the All-Star game as well. Okay, some great news for Tigers fans that are in the Kansai area or in Japan in general. We've got two legends of the team that are here from stateside visiting. Matt Merton arrived, I believe it was around July the 11th, and he's here for two and a half weeks with his family. I had the pleasure of having dinner with them, as well as some other people, on the 13th. So that was awesome. Good times. Yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, it was beyond awesome. I mean, like, I got to meet his family for the first time ever, which that's a starting point. But even just sitting and talking with Merton, we could probably do a show just on that. And I might do a column on that in the near future.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Yes. And the second former Tigers legend is the legend above all legends, and that would be none other than Bass Sasama. Randy Bass is here taking care of some business, somewhat related to what I talked about in my last daily sports column. There's going to be a movie made about him, and so I'm guessing they're filming some of the footage, but he's also got a whole bunch of other stuff going on as well. I think he is here through the end of the month, too.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Keep your eyes open, folks, and if you see Santa Claus walking around, it's probably Randy Bass in July. All right, last rumor, and this is a true rumor right here. The Tigers are rumored to be interested in former New York Yankees right-handed pitcher, reliever Colton Brewer, who is 30 years old. Do you know anything about him, Sanjay? Or
I think I've seen that he pitched a total of 99 innings in the major leagues, and his biggest workload was 58 innings and change 1 year, I think 2019. It's not super spectacular one way or the other, but they figure that he might fill a hole where we need it in our pen.
Yeah, it's looking like a bullpen acquisition. And, you know, that leads us right into the next corner. So why don't we hit the theme music for the first time in ages?
Did you hear something?
Coming in from around the world, Foreign Imports.
And talk about the imports. So, we're doing a bit of a shuffle here where Jeremy Beasley, has been trying to make his way into the rotation, and he kind of had an unsuccessful stint just after the interleague play. But he went back down to the farm. The good news is he threw eight innings of three hit, one run ball on the 13th down on the farm. He didn't get the win, but looked great in the process. I got to watch a good part of that game and created all kinds of weak contact and some windmill action. So that was kind of nice. So with him possibly moving into the rotation, that means we got to talk about our guy who was supposed to be part of the rotation all along, and that would be BK.
Yep.
So rumor has it, or reports have it, that this came through on the 14th of July, so about 4 days ago. He's apparently leaving the team. Apparently, they're going to just outright release him mid-season, which is kind of an unusual move. But given that he hasn't played at all in the top squad, he had his elbow looked at, and I'm guessing that the doctors probably said something like, you probably shouldn't pitch this year. So he's done.
So I really hope that he has a full and speedy recovery. I mean, he from the interviews, he's obviously a nice guy, very intelligent, and wishing nothing but the best for him.
Absolutely. And, like we who are here, or we who are reading the news fairly regularly, know that Mr. Okada did not seem to hold him in very high regard. And so, yeah, maybe this is for the best in a strange sort of way. I just hope that he picks up with another team somewhere in the US, or, you know, maybe Korea or Taiwan or whatever, if that interests him as well.
Totally.
Right. Well, continuing on with the import report, I mean, we haven't really talked a ton about these guys specifically in recaps and all that stuff because they're not featuring prominently in play. But let's give an update on the stat lines for our three imports. So I'll start out with KK. Kyle Keller, thus far this season, has 20 mounds, 20 and two-thirds innings pitched, a 1-0 record with five holds, a 2.18 ERA, 24 strikeouts, so a K to 9 ratio of roughly 10, or maybe a bit more, maybe 11, and 11 walks. So having himself a decent season, it's not maybe not quite what he did last year post-farming, you know, or, you know, post-recall. But he's still doing decently. So I'm kind of surprised they're not using him in high leverage situations. But that's the lowdown on KK. What about Noisy?
Sheldon. 79 games played, slashing 238, 294, 315. That's down quite a clip from how he started the season when he was hitting solidly in the 300s. Five home runs, 30 RBI. It's not shabby, but he hasn't been really coming through in the clutch of late, which is a bit of an issue.
Well, given that we've played as a team 84 games, meaning I think we have 59 left, I mean, that puts him on pace for about 8 home runs and 50 RBIs, which definitely, like, if you just look at those two numbers, is definitely lacking. And we'll see, you know, he might be able to pick it up in other ways that don't necessarily show up in the score sheet in that way. One thing I will say about Sheldon is that he has played some really solid defense. Runners are definitely hesitating to take the extra base on him because he's gunned guys down. And even when he doesn't, he sure makes it close.
Doesn't he actually lead the Central League in outfield assists?
I'm going to say yes without knowing, but sounds good.
I think he does.
Okay. All right. And then for Mie-chan, Johan Mieses probably has the best cheer song on the team, if you ask me. He's only played in 35 games so far, and he is slashing 207, 304, 356 with four home runs and 13 RBI. So his slash line, or like his OBP and his slug, are higher than Noisy's, but obviously his defense is a liability, which is what keeps him out of the lineup more often than not.
We still love him, though.
Of course, yeah, and he's a very lovable guy. I think the fans are crazy about him. I think the teammates like him as well.
I think Okada likes him too.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I mean, he definitely puts a smile on the old man's face, which is not a bad thing. All right, let's go have a look at what's going on down on the farm.
Doing the best on the farm. Gotta make the coaches see I can make my plays on the first team.
So through play on Sunday, the 16th, the team record is finally up to 500. It was actually a game over 500, but we're 36-36-1. We went 6-4 in this past stretch. Still in fourth place, but just six games out of first place. So you never know. All sorts of things can happen down the stretch on the farm. We could see ourselves getting another Yusho or Little Are down there.
Little Are. I like that.
Yes. So today, the 18th, is actually the Freshness All-Star game. Fresh All-Star? Freshness. Fresh All-Star. I'm thinking Freshness Burger.
I was going to say, where did that come from?
Fresh All-Star game for the young guys and for the primarily Nigun guys. But one of our guys on the top squad is actually on that team. That would be rookie Shota Morishita. Also from the Tigers are, what is he, third year now? Infielder Takatera, Nozomu Takatera. Yep. I think he's in his third year, but he's 20 years old still. And then a couple of first year guys out of high school. That would be Keito Monbetsu, the pitcher, the lefty, and Hinase Itsubo. I'm forgetting first names and they're not super important, but yeah, he's an outfielder that has had an outstanding run on the bottom squad for an 18 year old. So looking forward to seeing what they do tonight in Toyama.
Yeah, that boy can rake, Itsubo. And I, every time I hear his name, I keep thinking of Tsuboi, who also could rake back in the day.
There you go. Well, this guy's a righty. I think Tsuboi was a lefty.
That's right.
Yes. All right. Little difference there. Okay, so we will report in on the fresh All-Star game the next time that we talk. Right now, we got to talk about a guy that has freshened up his game in America.
You eat
chicken and with Fujinami.
You eat
chicken and with Fujinami.
Right. I didn't do this. I think I wanted to do this and you wouldn't let me. I said, hey, we got to up the stakes on Fuji and he's got to get his ERA under 9 before we talk about him again. Well, guess what? His ERA is under 9. So we're talking about him again. His ERA now is 8.75 with a 1.68 whip, not outstanding. He has not allowed a walk in 10 straight mounds. So these last five happened in the past fortnight. I guess the other five happened prior to that. But during this past fortnight now, let me calculate this out because I didn't do it ahead of time. My bad. It looks like 6 innings pitched and 3 hits, 2 runs, and 8 strikeouts with a win and a loss.
That's pretty incredible considering where he came from.
Yes, exactly. Well, so in this stretch, a 3 ERA, but I think even if you go back to the start of June, his ERA is hovering somewhere around 2, 2.5.
Yep.
So he's starting to figure things out. Sanjay, have you seen any action or do you know anything else?
Yeah. So not to bring the family into this, but our sound engineer show was at a game and texted me and said, I'm watching Fujinami pitch. And he has It's My Life by Bon Jovi as his sort of warm-up song. Oh. And, you know, it was definitely, he was saying It's My Life. And then I saw a couple of clips where he was just throwing gas, man. 100, 101, 102, and striking people out. And the announcers made a point, which I happened to catch. They said, this looks like a totally different guy from the one who started the season where he just looked happy to get off the mound after 3 outs. Here he was enjoying himself, pumping his fists, maybe even giving a yell or two on the mound, and just really a different person. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
In short, he looks like he belongs.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas I think at the start of the year, he didn't really look like he belonged. He looked like he was maybe questioning, like, should I really be here? But now, like, man, like even I've seen a couple highlights and he just looks very comfortable up there. When he gets out, yeah, sometimes he'll pump his fist or whatever if he gets out of jams or whatever. Like he did the other day, I think he induced a double play and got another pitcher out of his jam, which is kind of cool. But other times I've seen him get outs and he just looks like, man, you know, just another out because it's what I do. So that's good stuff.
Way to go, Fuji.
We're looking forward to talking about you more and more. So keep that ERA dropping, my friend. Okay, before we get into recapping the action, we got to give some shout outs to the patrons. And you can join them at patreon.com/thehanshintigers. For as little as $2 a month, you can have your name mentioned in every podcast. And there's all sorts of other tiers available as well. Once again, patreon.com/thehanshintigers. And this time we're thanking people from west to east or east to west or no, west to east. Here we go. We're starting with Jamie in Okayama, Anita in Nishinomiya, Joe in Wakayama, Tom Zilla in Osaka, JD in Kyoto, the Tokyo Swallows podcast out in Tokyo, Mario somewhere in the USA, so I put him first, Shane Barclay of Japan Ball, which he's based out in California, Blaine, Ian Hadel, Rick Silvers, all in Texas, Jay in Minnesota, Sean in Manchester, that's the UK, by the way. Fran is also in the UK. And Jan Rasanen is either in Helsinki or Osaka. Wherever you are, thank you for your support. Thank you all, patrons, for your support.
Thank you, patrons.
Recap! Sanjay, we overestimated the Tigers again. Unfortunately, we went 5-6 in this stretch. The good news is we're still in first place.
Yay for that.
So, yeah, for that, pretty much. Okay, let's talk through some of this. We'll skim through the losses and we'll talk maybe a bit longer about the wins if we feel like it. We're starting with a loss. So, Yuki Nishi on the mound on July the 4th against the Carb gave up 5 runs in the bottom of the first and then another in the bottom of the third. He was done. We lost this one 9-1. The only run came on a Sheldon Noisy home run. Next. July 5th, we kind of got even with a shutout, and that was thanks to Otake with a complete game shutout. And replacing Chikamoto in the leadoff spot and in center was Shimada at this point with a leadoff home run, his first career home run, and what, the third Tiger to ever get his first career home run in that leadoff spot at the start of a game? Something like that. I know Takayama did it, and then I think maybe your boy Tsuboi did it.
That could be very well be true, yeah.
Yes, and Shimada is the first one to not do it as a rookie. So the other two did it in their rookie years. Okay.
Right.
We scored another run in that one. So a 2-1, 2-0 win there. Unfortunately, that's all we got in Hiroshima. We lost the next game, 4-0. We got shut out. Murakami gave up 4 runs. And that's it. We're done talking about Hiroshima. Right. We got some rain the next day. So we got the Friday off. It actually didn't rain that much. So I'm kind of surprised they rained that game out. A little bit disappointed, but given what happened the next day, like, okay, fine. We lost 2-3 against the Swallows at home. And let me get down to the tail of the tape on this one. Ito lost his winning streak at Koshien at 11 games. It was snapped. We had some great chances to at least tie the game, if not do better, but could not do it. And so 3-2 loss.
You're not going to talk about the Oyama run. Or non-run.
Oh, yeah. That was the big point in this one as well, kind of. We had a chance to, at this point, it would have been take the lead, right? Because we had tied it up. Mieses up, and it was Oyama on second and Noisy on third with one out. And Mieses popped one up to somewhat shallow center, but it would have been enough for Noisy to score. And Noisy ran his butt off to get home, but Oyama decided to try to take third. And their cutoff guy noticed that. And he forwarded the ball, parlayed the ball to third base, and Oyama got tagged out like a fraction of a second before Noisy crossed home or touched home. And so that run didn't count, and that really hurt.
Yeah, that was, as you pointed out, I think the third time in this season in NPB that a similar play happened. So apparently learning from history is not a forte in NPB.
I guess not, yeah. So that was the real unfortunate thing in that game, and kind of put our backs against the walls. We didn't want to get swept in this rain-shortened series against the Swallows. Well, the good news is that we didn't, and that's in large part thanks to Junya, who made his comeback, I think it was in this game, or was it another one? Maybe it was the week prior he did, but this is a second solid start. 7 innings pitched, no runs against, and we won this one 1-0 because in the bottom of the eighth, Morishita took the first pitch he saw. It was a fastball, I believe, from Kizawa. To left center for his first career home run.
And that's right.
Iwasato with the win, Iwasaki with the save. So we tie that series against the Swallows.
Remember the name Morishita.
Can't forget the name Morishita, not the way he's been playing of late. Let's go to Kurashiki, out to Okayama, where Jamie is, and actually where another friend of our podcast, or friend of mine, I guess, John, works. And he actually was at this game. So Kurashiki is out in Okayama, where once a year, we have been playing a home game, but because of COVID, it's been three seasons without one there. So this is the first one in 4 years.
That's right.
We won 7-2. So we had some good action in the bottom of the third. And then I think we scored 3 runs there. Then Miyazaki got 2 back for the Bay Stars in the top of the fourth, but in the bottom of the fifth, Kinami with a 2-run single, and then Morishita with an RBI single. And in the bottom of the eighth, we scored another run. So 7-2 win. Aoyagi with a comeback from a long stint on the farm. 7 innings pitched, 2 runs against. Got the W.
This was the one where Kinami had himself a day, right? 5 RBIs?
You are correct. Yes, he hit a bases-clearing double over center fielder in the bottom of the third for his first 3. And then, 2 more later. So the next day, we got to face everybody's favorite pitcher, Trevor Bauer. Well, he seems to be. I mean, he won the plus one for getting into the All-Star game with like 396,000 votes compared to like 39,000 for Murakami. Crazy. Anyhow, Bow Wow, T-Bow on the mound for them. And we had Otake, who actually gave up a couple runs in the first and second innings. We tied it up in the bottom of the fourth. And then they took it right back in the top of the fifth. So that was real unfortunate. It's 4-2. It's looking bad. And Bauer is cruising until the bottom of the eighth when Itohara lashed a single into shallow left. And then what name were we supposed to remember again?
Morishita.
That's right. First pitch he sees. No, it was a 1-1 count against Bauer. And a low fastball, and he clubbed it basically to the same spot he did 3 days prior against the Swallows. So tie game 4-4. We had a chance to take the lead here. We didn't at that point, but it's okay because in the bottom of the ninth, Noisy walked. Sakamoto reached on an error from their pitcher. Kumagai walked, and then Morishita with a walk-off sack fly. It was more like a hard line drive than a sack fly. And I think if the outfield had not been drawn in, that would have been a gapper. It was a well hit ball.
It certainly was. He mashed it.
Anyways, a game that it looked like the Tigers had no business winning ended up being a Tigers win, 5-4. Love it. Shall we just skip over the next game? Because Sunday Thursday. Nothing to talk about. We lost 4-0. Again, Murakami, the victim of no offense. The good news. Perceived good news is that we're going up against the Dragons for our last three of this recap, and we always crush the Dragons at home, except this time. So I was at the game on Saturday, and again, this was one that we didn't play outstanding, but we were leading 4-2 going into the ninth inning, and Iwazaki was not our ninth inning guy on this day. It was Iwasada, and he blew it. He gave up 2 runs, so it's a tie. We couldn't score in the bottom of the ninth. My son is young, so we left after the top of the ninth, actually mid-top of the ninth. We were like, we don't know when this game's ending. We're out of here because it was already late. I'm glad because as we're making our way home, we're on the bus and we're getting close to our bus stop. I checked the score and they scored 2 more. And then I checked again. And of course, they have Martinez on the mound and he shut us down. So 6-4 loss in extras. We should have won this one. But, you know, if you look at that Bay Stars game that we won and should have lost, we just reversed it here. We lost and we should have won.
It evens out. There was some commentary from Yabu, the former Hanshin teacher, pitcher, saying that if Iwazaki wasn't available, maybe they should have had another arm in the bullpen instead of keeping in the bullpen but not available. I don't know what the issue is with Iwazaki, by the way, but he wasn't available to pitch that day.
Yeah, and yet, I mean, they did use him just yesterday. So he, I don't know what it might have been. But anyhow. Shall we skip over Sunday's game? Because, again, another shutout loss. Yeah. This one, Ito was on the mound for us. What's that?
Except I want to mention that Nakano was friggin' outstanding as a defensive player. Had 3 spectacular plays playing second base. And T-Ray put him up on, at least 2 of them up on Twitter. So look for H10.
Yes. I don't know. It could be Nakano's year for the Golden Glove. But he'll have to beat Kikuchi, who has the name brand. Anyways, so that was a loss that we'll just completely brush over other than Nakano's outstanding defensive play. Fortunately, we end this recap on a positive and we head into the All-Star break in first, just a game up on the Carp. But let's get to this game. So bottom of the first, Sato, finally, at long last, after a month plus of no home runs, hit a home run, a 3-run blast to right center. For a 3-run lead after 1 inning. And then Junya gave himself a bit of support in the bottom of the second with an RBI single. And other than that one blemish on him the very next inning, and he was just the victim of some kind of lucky hitting on their part, balls just found the turf where they shouldn't have, one of them was supposed to break foul and it didn't. I don't know what happened to that ball, but it ended up staying fair. It was weird. Anyhow, so just the 1 run against him though, 7 innings pitched, 9 hits against, but again, several of those were lucky. I would say probably 4 of them had no business being hits, and it wasn't poor defense. It was just lucky bounces or lucky whatever. 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, 1 run against. So he got the W, and Iwazaki with the save.
And for the record, Sato became the 3rd Hanshin Tiger ever to record 3 straight seasons of double-digit home runs after turning pro. And the other 2 before him, the first was Koichi Tabuchi, the old Mr. Tigers, number 22 catcher until he got traded to the Sable Lions. And the second one was his current skipper, Akinobu Okada. So you're in good company, buddy.
There you go. And speaking of Okada, man, we have not heard this theme song in forever. So let's hear it for Okada.
Are? Okada.
Yeah. And actually, this is the topic of today's show. So we're not actually rolling the Hot Topic music, but we're going to talk about the manager as our Hot Topic. So as I said a little bit earlier, the team is in first place, a game up on the surprising Carp, who have really surged along. But we are, what is it, 11 games over 500 at this point, which is not too bad. But when you consider we were 19 above 500 after one game of Interleague, this is a little bit of a downer. But anyhow, we're not here to talk about wins and losses and, oh, how many games did Okada save us or prevent us from winning or anything. It's not really about that. What I want to do, though, is, well, first of all, let's add a little bit more news. I just came across the wire today that Okada is going to be manager again in 2024, at least based on how things have gone so far. He did have a two-year contract, so next year is year two, but ownership has actually gone on record as saying, yes, we are bringing him back. We're honoring the contract.
I think this is kind of silly, though. I mean, surprise, surprise, you know, and, you know, the sun comes up from the east.
Right, right. I mean, did they really have to turn it into a story? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, the interesting thing about managers in Japan in NPB is that it's quite a bit different, I would say, than managers in the U.S. in Major League Baseball, especially of late. Managers in Japan. And I'm going to kind of quote from this book here, The Sports World of the Hanshin Tigers, written by William W. Kelly. Fabulous man. And this is a great book, an awesome read. So if you have a chance to get this book, shameless plug, I might even put the Amazon link in the show notes. Get it. So I'm looking at page 103, I believe it is, where Kelly says that NPB managers have three distinct hats that they need to wear. And he calls them field general, name brand, and department head. And he breaks them down in a little bit of detail. But Sanjay and I are going to talk about how we feel Mr. Okada is doing at these three things. And so the field general, of course, I think that's kind of an understood job that that's what managers do worldwide, whether it's baseball or any other sport. And so we're basically looking at, like, for Okada, it would be things like observing the players during practice and seeing who's hot and who's not, or who's got their swing good or whatever. And he may go over and give advice. He may not. But based on what he sees in practice and workouts and maybe previous games, he's making the starting lineups. He's also making the in-game decisions, such as when to use pinch hitters and who to put in different situations and when to pull pitchers and bring in relievers and stuff like that. So what do you think? Are there any situations that come to mind or anything that you feel about Okada in this respect?
Yeah. Other than the fact that he doesn't really talk directly to his players all that much, and he likes to delegate it to his coaches, I think he's doing a spectacular job of this. And I'm particularly impressed by things like when he started, I want to say, who did he start in left field that one day when somebody got hurt? Not Morishita, but he had Maegawa, Morishita, and Onodera in the outfield one day. The press asked him, like, so was this kind of a last-minute decision or something like that? And he's like, no, at the end of yesterday's game, I had already made my decision, and I knew from the coaches and so on that they were hot in practice and that they deserved a shot against a lefty pitcher or something like that. And so he delegates, but he has his mindset from ahead of time.
Yeah.
It's not like a last minute, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Let's just do this as a panic move, which I like.
So, I mean, like the starting lineup is submitted or published around 45 minutes before game time. So maybe their deadline is like an hour before or whatever. It's not like he's sitting, you know, at his desk at 4:58 going, oh, who do I put in? Right. Like, yeah, obviously he's probably got a plan in all of this. I know he's got a really good head for the game, and a lot of the decisions he makes are quite sound. at the start of the season when he, or before the season started, I guess, when he was hired as manager, a lot of experts were saying things like, we're going to see a more mature version of baseball than we did under Yano. And that was a bit of a jab maybe at Yano, given that he tried a lot of things that were maybe a little bit unorthodox. And the way that he approached players was a little bit unorthodox, calling them by their first name, things like that. I mean, in Japan, that's just unheard of. So I think, you know, we were kind of told that we would see a little bit more of a standard baseball where when decisions are made or when we see things, we'll be able to basically understand the thinking behind it because it's very logical.
And he's certainly come through on that front.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. A couple of things I want to bring up in here, though, and just kind of bounce these off of you as well. We know that he's been very consistent about his starting lineup, right? Like we tend to see the same guys in the same batting in the same spot and playing the same positions, which again is a big change from Yano's tenure as manager. And in some ways, it can definitely be the team's strength. But I'm thinking in particular about the bottom of the order and how we have Kinami down there in the number eight spot, and he's been hitting quite well almost the entire year. And I heard this just this morning on Tiger's Cast as I was listening to the Japanese podcast about the team, and they kind of brought this up. They're like, you know, when Chikamoto went down, like, I wonder if it crossed the manager's mind to move Kinami up to either the one spot or the two spot to compensate for Chika's absence, as opposed to, like, he plugged Shimada in there, which I know Shimada is the best or the next best option in center as far as maybe defense or whatever. And he is kind of a broke man's Chikamoto.
Yeah.
Sorry, Shimada. Sorry. But yeah, so I know that he's kind of a similar type player. So plugging him into that leadoff spot and center field kind of made sense. But at the same time, like, would it have made sense to put Kinami up there in the top, maybe first or second? Or what do you think about that?
Well, I think that Kinami is too valuable where he is as sort of the number eight hitter from hell for the other team. And, you know, it's good when you have the number eight hitter get on base, because then the pitcher automatically just bunts him over and you've got a man on second with one away and the top of the lineup coming up. So I think that Okada is thinking, if it ain't broke, why fix it? It's just working so well. And he has more options plugging in the leadoff hitter like Morishita, who's been doing a job so far. Right. So I think that what he's done is the right move, right call.
Well, and what you just brought up was kind of an assumption that the number eight batter would be leading off an inning. But more often than not, that's been the case, given that our number seven hitter is the catcher and Umeno really hasn't been getting it done.
Right. And actually, lately, Okada has used Sakamoto a little more. And the phrase I saw in the press was, well, Umeno's lead sucks so bad recently that I got to play the other guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, again, like, there's got to be that balance with the catcher. And we've talked about this in previous shows of being able to call a good game for the pitcher, but also being able to produce at least, you know, a bare minimum amount of getting on base or advancing runners or whatever it might be. So that's the other one that I wanted to bring up a little bit with you is, like, yeah, there's consistency in the lineup, but I feel like he's just too stubborn with Noisy and maybe even Umeno until recently of, like, consistently using them, where, you know, at the start of the year, Sakamoto had the hot bat and was great at calling the game for the pitchers. I almost would have expected for Sakamoto to kind of take over more playing time. And then with Noisy, you know what, truth be told, like, I don't want to diss anybody, but I don't know what keeps him in the lineup.
Well, I'm going to take the other side of that argument, because I think that Okada is giving enough motivation to the non-starters by saying things like, you can get in the outfield if you can play. You know, right field hasn't been set in stone. And even left field between Noisy and sometimes Mieses and so on. Uh-huh. And even well, hell, even third base when, you know, Sato wasn't doing so well and he'd sub Itohara in there and so on. It gives the other players motivation that if they do well in the farm or in practice or whatever, that they're going to see some playing time and it's not just only the starters. I think Okada is doing a decent balance of that while still giving the bulk of the minutes to the starters.
That's fair. That's fair. And I, you know, on that note, I think his prodigious use of Maegawa is worth mentioning. That, you know, Maegawa came in and struggled for, I think, his first 12 at-bats or so. Mm-hmm. And then he caught fire and he was doing outstanding. He was batting like 350. And then, I mean, it slowly started to come down, but I think now it's around 267 or so. But I think he's got an understanding, at least with Maegawa, that A, he's had a couple of injuries already in his young time as a pro, and B, this is his first time actually playing this much. And so he hasn't said like, I'm putting him out there every single game. Like, he's actually been a little bit smart about it, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And he's responded. Maegawa has responded.
Yeah. He definitely has. Definitely has. Although on that note, just Maegawa, I know this is a corner about Okada, but I heard that Maegawa kind of got a little bit upset after, I think it was the shutout, the most recent shutout loss. And maybe he was doing something with his equipment that he shouldn't have been, like throwing it around. And I think he got a talking.
He got a talking to, yes, definitely.
Yeah, not from Okada, but from one of the coaches, yeah. Anyhow, last thing on this first role of being the field general, and that is, I think the use of relievers has been a bit odd. And again, we mentioned that in the fact that Iwasada blew that game on Saturday, and it wasn't, you know, in retrospect, it's easy to say, why did you use Iwasada? Right. But I mean, I feel like there's been a bit of an imbalance and a lack of clarity in the roles. And that might be just the fact that when Yuasa kind of fell off the shelf, it was like, okay, well, now we've got to shuffle everything and figure out, well, who's our eighth inning guy? And we don't really have a set eighth inning guy. And I've seen, like, for example, a guy like Ishii, right, who's been used in really tight situations, and he's also been used in losing situations. And then Kajiya was used like crazy. And then like Hamachi has been used in tight situations, despite the fact that he has a terrible track record this year. And Hamachi's played in 22 games, despite being farmed twice already this year. And KK, who I don't think has been farmed yet, has only played in 20 games. So I just can't help but wonder what's the plan with that bullpen?
It almost feels like it's he's managing by gut feel on those fronts.
Uh-huh.
And that KK just hasn't earned back all the trust yet, unfortunately, because I would like nothing better than for KK to just like be lights out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be. And I think, you know, that started back in camp, and I don't know if Okada lumped all the foreigners together, but he didn't like what BK was doing at camp. He didn't seem to like that Beasley wasn't taken to the mound much either. So he might have just lumped KK into that and said, we can't trust the guy genes. But whatever. It is what it is. I'm not going to complain too much about it. Anything else you want to talk about as far as the field general aspect of Okada?
Nope.
Okay, let's move on then to name brand, which is the second one. And I equate this to, well, first of all, it would be being on all the billboards and advertisements and in all the like the team magazine and merchandise and all that kind of stuff. That's one. But then also, you know, sometimes they're making TV appearances in the off season on different news shows or whatever talk shows. They have pre and post game interviews. They're always being interviewed by the press because the Hanshin media is absolutely like, they're like a pack of predators that just, you know,
hyenas.
Yeah.
They're relentless. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then they're on camera during the game as well. After every single big play, they always go to the manager. How did the manager react? What does he think about this? And so that's kind of billboard. That's name brand right there, right? Like the team, how the manager looks after those plays even is telling you something about the team and the team brand or the team image. So how do you feel that Okada has done as the name brand for the Tigers?
I'm going to give him an A+ on that one.
Ooh, okay. What do you like about him?
I like that he is actually visually easy to read in terms of when he's happy and when he's not happy.
Indeed.
You know, there's you don't have to like second guess, like, what is he really thinking? And also, I can't get enough of his interviews after games. He is just so, I don't know, shooting straight from the hip, you know, telling it like it is, telling him what he feels, and a lot of times chastising reporters for asking stupid questions, and stating the obvious, and so on. I find him to be a hoot. And, you know, there are a couple games this past fortnight, I guess, where he said, sorry, no interviews after the game today because they played so horribly and he was in such a bad mood. Yeah. And I eat all of that up. I think he's just fantastic on that front.
All right. Fair enough. You know, I think, you know, to your point, like, you see this, I mean, the reporters are quoting him talking to them, right? Yep. And so you see this, like, sonna omae, right? And the omae is like kind of a little bit of a, not degrading, but a very informal you, right? When the person saying omae is higher on the, in the rankings than the person who is receiving the omae. Anyways, he uses that with the reporters, you know, and he definitely does kind of pick on them for some of their questions. But I also noticed in the post-game interviews, especially, well, the ones after wins, the ones that I actually get to watch, he tends to answer the questions that aren't asked. Like, he hears a name or an incident in the question, and he'll just take off with it how he wants. Like, his mind is already starting to answer before they finish the question, and he doesn't end up answering their questions very well. But I think that's kind of funny. I think it's a little bit charming.
Yeah, plus he gives good nuggets of information of what he's thinking and what's going on. I mean, 120%, I love it.
Yeah, I will say, like, there are times that he kind of singles out players via the media. And on one hand, you might say, well, why doesn't he just talk to the players themselves? Well, that's not his style, for one. That's just not what he does. And I think that when he does that through the media, he's kind of sending them a message, not necessarily to say, I'm done with you or you suck or whatever. Like, he doesn't just say, like, oh, well, this player blew this play, therefore we lost. Like, it's not like he's doing that type of thing, but he will say things like, well, you know, those are the kind of plays that blah, blah, blah. Right. But I think it's almost like his way of saying, hey, players, like, you got to check this through the media, but you're going to see, like, this is my kind of roundabout way of telling you this. And they have to kind of think about it a little bit. It's not a straightforward, you know, thing, but I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad.
Right. And like you were saying, like, again, to your point, you see a lot of times when the camera kind of zooms in on him during the game, it's very clear how he's feeling, you know. But he's not the type to get super angry, although the expression on his face sometimes, like, he does look a little bit ape-like, and he looks like an angry ape at times. Not in the sense like he's gonna, you know, destroy anything, but rather he just looks like, you know, he's very annoyed with something that happened. But then on the other hand, like, he is genuinely happy when the players do well, and yep. So I think that is works in his favor. All of this, though, comes down to the fact that Okada, in case you didn't know this, was and is, you know, a born and bred Hanshin Tigers fan through and through. Before he was a player on the team, even, you know, he grew up watching the Tigers, going to Tigers games. I think his dad was friendly with, like, was it Fujimura or Murakami or Murayama, I should say.
Murayama, right?
Legend of the team. And his dad was friends with them. And so he got to play catch with Murayama, I believe. Or maybe Fujimura even. But anyways, you know, like, he played much of his career with the Tigers. He managed the Tigers already once. He came back to manage again here because of his love for the team. So you can't ask for a better name brand, I think, than a guy that loves the team this fiercely.
Agreed.
All right. Let's move on to department head. And I kind of define this in these ways: running the coaching staff, promoting and demoting players, and then drafting and trading players. Those are kind of the big three things. And so, any thoughts on how he does as department head?
Well, so with regard to running coaching staff, I thought was telling the most recent, again, the same example of playing Morishita in center field when Chikamoto was gone. And some reporter asked him, so, you know, what made you decide that? He goes, like, I don't micromanage this stuff. I asked the outfield coach, who should we play in center? And I go with that. And so he seems to give a lot of responsibility delegate a lot of responsibility and listen to the coaches because they're the ones who know better than him. He manages the overall big picture, but he doesn't micromanage, which I think is good from a manager's perspective.
Right. I mean, there's a reason that the coaches are there. And so use them, use their expertise, wisdom, and their observational skills as well. So on that note, though, I did hear, I think this is again from Tiger's Cast from maybe a week or two ago, but they were saying, well, why did he put in this pitcher in this situation? Why didn't he use this pitcher? Why does he keep using this pitcher? Or like, why doesn't Ando, the pitching coach, right? Like there's two pitching coaches. Usually one is in the bullpen. The other one is on the bench, right? Ando's the one on the bench. And apparently, like Ando was kind of told by Hirata, the head coach, like, look, when Okada looks like he's in a bad mood, just don't question anything. Don't give him ideas because he's busy thinking about stuff. So just let him do his thing. And so I think that might come into play sometimes when we kind of shrug our shoulders or raise our eyebrows at some of the things that they're doing. Because there might be a little bit of maybe not fear, but just that intimidation, like, oh, now is not a good time to go talk to him, like mid-game type of thing.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. I mean, he's grumpy old man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's one of those guys just with that, not necessarily tunnel vision, but he's like, leave me alone. I'm thinking about something brilliant right now. Or like, I've got this plan that I really need to make sure I get straight right here and right now. So don't talk to me type of thing. I mean, he definitely has a head for the game.
And he's sort of that chess player who thinks like four steps ahead.
Right. And we're not necessarily on that same page with him. I think even the coaches are not on that same page, like thinking that far ahead. So,
yeah.
As we know, Okada doesn't necessarily talk to the players directly, not a whole lot anyways. I've heard this on many instances, like both from the foreign players and even the Japanese players. So as a department head, as far as that goes, like, what do you think about that? Not actually like communicating with the players. Do you think there's a reason that we don't know, or is there something that you respect or not respect about this?
I think that that's kind of like his style, and I don't think it's necessarily better or worse than the other one. Mm-hmm. And 180 degree turnaround from Yano, who wanted to be everybody's buddy, and Okada is like, I don't want to be your buddy, and I am I am the boss, I don't need to be your friend. And I kind of respect that. I've seen that in my own non-baseball related work career, where it's tough to be the person on top. You can't be buddies with everybody. You can't make everybody happy. You got to like fire people and stuff like that. So it's best not to get too close for someone like that.
Well, I think, you have to draw the line somewhere, and he's made the decision that that's where he's drawing that line. And I mean, once you cross that line, or if you don't draw that line and you say, well, I'm going to talk to just the star players, or I'm just going to talk to them in these instances, like, it's really hard to actually make that distinction then and to be consistent in that. But it's pretty easy for him to be consistent in what he's doing. Okay, as for promotions and demotions, the only one that I made note of is Sato. And that demotion, we talked about that a little bit last show, but it's still kind of a little bit of a mystery. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Sato was called up a bit early because of Chikamoto's injury. And maybe that we felt like we needed that potential offensive firepower in Chika's absence. Or do you think that it was agreed that Sato was ready to come up?
I think, my read, and I know nothing more than I read, but he needed an attitude adjustment. He seemed to make that adjustment. He was ready to come back, and we needed him. So it was like a confluence of events that necessitated him coming back.
But I think, didn't he say in one interview, he was like, "Sora Koshien yo," and he was like, we're bringing him back when we get back to Koshien, but then we brought him back in Hiroshima. So I think it might have been a little bit rushed, maybe just by a couple days.
Maybe by a couple days, yeah.
Yeah. So the other part of the department head, I said, was drafting and trading players. And we've only had one trade since he's become the manager. And that was, in essence, it was giving up Egoshi for Watanabe. I mean, there were other bit pieces, and neither of those guys has contributed on either team. Now, Egoshi has done quite well up in Hokkaido, at least better than he had done in recent years here with the Tigers. And Watanabe I don't think has really performed super well, but at the same time, I don't necessarily see this as a failure of a trade because I don't think Egoshi would have gotten the chance or made or had the results had he stayed here. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree that Egoshi wouldn't have had a place here, and to the point, to the extent that Watanabe went and hit that dinger that won us the game the other day and can play third base as a right-handed hitter who can hit fastballs, which is the exact opposite of what they kept saying was the problem with Sato as a left-handed third baseman who couldn't hit fastballs. It was a good counterpoint to have for us. So I don't think it was a bad thing. I don't think he Okada necessarily instigated that trade, but he certainly gave his stamp of approval, and I think that was the right call.
Right. That said, you know, we could have used Egoshi in Chikamoto's absence, but we don't predict broken ribs, so we never would have known that. But you know,
true,
him in center field to replace Chika wouldn't have been too bad. Anyhow, and then we got the Rule 5 draft, or the Japanese equivalent of that, that happened, and so Okada would have been behind that pick, at least to an extent. But again, he might have just leaned on the coaches or the scouting department, I should say, to make that decision. But that's turned out really well. We got Otake, the best pick out of any team, although Hosokawa was a good pick for the Dragons as well. But and all it cost us was Yokawa. So I'm calling that big success.
Huge success. Yes. And I think I've read a number of times that the Hanshin scouts, I guess, front office, were looking at Otake for a long time, but he wasn't made available. Right. And also that Otake said that it was tough being in the SoftBank system because everybody there threw really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you couldn't throw hard, you had no chance of moving up.
Right.
And here was the guy who, you know, like subsisted on guile and effective placement and so on. And so he kind of had an inkling that he needed to go to a different place to succeed. And the Tigers knew that they liked crafty lefties in the mold of Shimoya Nagi or whomever else you want to name. And so it was a meeting of the minds. And certainly Okada gave the green light for this one, I know. So well done to all.
And yeah, Otake looks pretty happy to be with the Tigers. So yeah, win-win for us right there. Okay, and lastly, the draft. And again, Okada was only part of one. And I think like he came in probably not knowing much. But let's just go over the names of the guys that were in that draft. We got Morishita in the first round, Monbetsu second round, Itsubo third round, Ibaragi fourth round, Toi fifth round, Tomita sixth round, and Noguchi with the development first round pick. And so far we've only had Morishita and Tomita make it up to the top squad of these. And interestingly, you know, Okada is only expected to be the manager for a couple of years because of his age, and you know, it's a 2-year contract, and it's kind of understood that probably after that he'll be done. He might do one more year, but maybe not. But so most of these guys are not even going to play under Okada, the manager, because they're still like 18, 19 years old. But a good investment in the future right there. I mean, I like what I've seen so far on the farm from those young guys as well. And Morishita looks like once he kind of gets a little bit more consistent, man, the speed of the ball off of that bat, it's a sight to see. So
looking forward to seeing it live, yeah.
So all that to say, Sanjay, I would say that for all intents and purposes, you know, Okada is fulfilling the three roles reasonably well of field general, name brand, and department head. There's things that, you know, people like more than others about what Okada's doing, and some people don't like him at all. In fact, you know, on Twitter, anytime the Tigers hit a bit of a cold spell, you got the old trending Okada Yamero, you know, hashtag or whatever, which I think is just disgusting, and there's no reason for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said I'm starting the hashtag Okada Gambare or Okada Tsuzukero or something, you know, because I want him in there.
I noticed that, and I fully support it. And look, the dude is like, he's got the team in first place at the All-Star break. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, what are you talking about, right? Yamero.
Since 2015, only two teams have led at the All-Star break and not won the pennant in the Central. Don't ask me who they were.
I was not going to ask that because I knew you were going to say that.
Because the answer is, I'm going to say it anyways, the 2015 Hanshin Tigers and the 2021 Hanshin Tigers. But the other years, whoever was in first at the All-Star break also won the pennant. Don't say that I jinxed it if it doesn't happen, because this little podcast don't have that power. All right, let's predict the next week and a half of action after the All-Star game.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions.
What's going to happen? What's the record going
to be? So, we go to Jingu Park for Saturday, Sunday, the 22nd, 23rd. Take a day off, and then we host the Urutora no Natsu, the Ultra Summer Homestand, at the end of July, right before we head off on the Road of Death. So we will host the Giants for 3 and the Carp for 3. Thoughts on this?
So there are 8 games total, right?
Yes.
We have to go 5-3.
Yes. That's a bare minimum.
So I'm going to say 5-3.
I'm going to say 6-2, because more often than not, the Urutora no Natsu ends up being pretty good showing for our team. I would also say that probably because every team starts on Saturday, Sunday, we're going to avoid Togo for the Giants, which would be nice. And we'll have the weekend against the Carp, so we may face some of their better pitching. But I still think that we can take at least 1, if not 2, against the Swallows at Jingu. And then I'm hoping we can go 5-1 during our Ultra Summer run. And I'm at the game on Tuesday, so Tigers, don't let me down. All right. That's a wrap for another episode of H10. Thank you for tuning in. And if you haven't gotten your fill of us, something's wrong, because we're everywhere. We are on Patreon. We're on the website. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. If you want more, you got to get my phone number. No, you can also check out my daily sports column in Japanese if you want to try it. You're in Nihongo. In the process of drafting my July article, so hopefully it'll be out by the end of the month. Those details are in the show notes. Special thanks to Infraction for the theme music, and Sanjay, your son, Sho, for mixing the show for us. Thank you, Sanjay, for joining me for another fun episode of H10.
Thank you for having me, as always. It's always loads of fun.
All right, let's go. Ganbare Hanshin Tigers!
Ganbare Hanshin! Are ya de are!
Allez!